I think we're at a very perilous time. No free republic in the history of civilization has lasted longer than 300 years, and that was the Roman Empire. We are 240 years old in our experiment in American democracy. We're still trying to get it right.
I don't have games on my phone. I don't follow dumb news sources in social media. On my phone, you will find lots of news apps, and then you'll find some maps and things of that nature. And it's not that I don't like games. I just don't have a lot of use for them. But I do spend a fair amount of time reading. So there's a story right now with North Korea. And the North Korean dictator, the leader, has come out and it's inevitable. He's about to hit him some America with a bomb. And it's all because of what President Dum Dum has been saying. You know, flexing his flabby little muscles in the media. And Kim Jong-un is taking that pretty seriously. But the thing that seems to be the screaming headline right now on a lot of the news outlets, and certainly every bit of my social media feed, is the fact that one of the Kardashians is pregnant. Wait a minute. Let me tell you how, and I can't even tell you which one it is. Let me tell you how consequential it is that one of these Kardashians is banging it out with a dude. It's not important. No one cares. And I don't understand why this is a shock. There's honest to goodness news going on right now. Betsy DeVos just changed Title IX, the way campus sexual assaults are handled. And it's been changed to, and I won't get into the whole thing, but suffice it to say, it's been changed to where the law now favors the attacker over the victim, because she felt like guys who were being accused of rape were not getting a fair shake. That's a real story. Trump care has come back from the dead, and it's even more poisonous than it was before. And they need to pass it by midnight on the 30th, by the end of this month. Otherwise, they're going to need a super majority to do it. And that's super unlikely. That's a real story. But what we're hearing about, oh, and then, of course, Kim Jong-un saying it's inevitable that one of their missiles is going to hit the mainland. That's a story. But what's clogging up my feed right now is the crap about the Kardashians. We have to prioritize, and I don't think I have to remind you about that. Oh, wait, yes, I do. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. If you're a regular consumer of this show, you know the things that we talk about. It's not Hollywood, it's not gossip, because none of that stuff is consequential. And I don't understand how this stuff is just consuming the world around me, but these more important things... The campus sexual assault thing, that's a big deal. Betsy DeVos is a woman, but Betsy DeVos is a privileged woman with little to no empathy who has lived a life where she's insulated from the rest of us. And it's insane to me that that's not the headline. That if you are assaulted on campus, the level of evidence that you're going to have to come forward with now favors your attacker.
So last week, Breitbart.com published an article claiming that global warming was nothing but a scare and global temperatures were actually falling. Problem is, they used a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it to attempt to back their point. Now, what's worse is that the U.S. Committee on Space Science and Technology actually tweeted it out. Here's the thing. Science doesn't care about your opinion. Cherry picking and twisting the facts will not change the future, nor the fact. Note fact, not opinion, that the Earth is warming.
That's Kate Parker from the Weather Channel. And that level of frustration is what I'm hearing more and more, not just from me. And you'll hear clear frustration from me today. But that's Kate Parker from the Weather Channel talking about how her reporting, along with her image, was twisted to push a right-wing point of view about how climate change isn't real and or is not man-made and is not happening now. The recent storms that we have seen in Texas and in Florida and that, of course, in South America that are still happening right now are pretty clear indicators. Now, hurricanes and tornadoes, that's what it is. They happen. They happen. But the hurricanes that we have seen, we know from science that they are exacerbated by warmer water. And the carbon that we are trapping inside the environment right now, most of that, 90%, right around 90% of that, is absorbed by the oceans, which makes the ocean warmer, which makes hurricanes worse. So the way this is being twisted right now is, oh, you liberals, you're just making it all up, right? We didn't have hurricanes before this year. But we know that the warmer waters are making it worse. And although the head of the Republican Party, the de facto head, Donald Trump, and the head of the federal government, President Donald Trump, are saying, along with the head of the EPA, are saying that climate change isn't real. Climate change isn't the thing. It's not man-made, and it's not happening right now. The Pentagon is saying very differently, and they have been preparing for climate change for a long time. And they don't merely prepare for climate change. They prepare for something that is referred to as societal collapse. The headline, the Pentagon is preparing for societal collapse due to climate change. I read this story on the air a while back. It says the national security and the threat of climate change prepared by the CNA and released in 2007 with an advisory board of 11 of the country's top retired generals and admirals summarizes those threats and how the military will need to adapt to societal collapse as a result of climate change. And this week, we got some new news on this particular thing. It's not necessarily encouraging, but it should be a wake-up call for everybody. And the headline from The Guardian by Ian Johnston, the environmental correspondent over there: global mass extinction set to begin by the year 2100. A mathematical formula based on previous mass die-offs suggests that the Earth is set to cross the threshold of catastrophe. Remember that phrase. By the end of this century because of fossil fuels. Planet Earth appears to be on a course for the start of the sixth mass extinction of life by about 2100 because of the amount of carbon being pumped into the atmosphere, according to a mathematical study of the five previous events in the last 540 million years. Now, if you are an evangelical Christian, this likely isn't real to you because you believe that the Earth is only 5,000 years old. But for the rest of you that believe in facts, science, empirical evidence, Professor David Rothman, co-director of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Lorenz Center, theorized that disturbances in the natural cycle of carbon through atmosphere, oceans, plant and animal life played a role in the mass die-offs of animals and plants. So he studied 31 times when there had been such changes and found 4 out of 5 of the previous mass extinctions took place when the disruptions crossed a threshold of catastrophic change. The worst mass extinction of all, the so-called Great Dying, some 248 million years ago, when 96% of all species were wiped out. Now, right now, we're roughly losing about 1,000 species a day. And so does this mean 1,000 different animals are being wiped out? No, we too are a species. And a lot of what it is bacteria. Now, we have a symbiotic relationship with bacteria. If you've got good bacteria in your gut, you're going to have a better health. So, and we don't think about these things. We're also deeply connected to the ocean. And with the ocean absorbing all that carbon right now, a lot of folks, it's freaking ocean, who cares? You know, we're connected to all of it though. I don't know if you noticed, but a massive part of the planet is covered by water. And that water is ocean, and water is also very much life. But Melvin, I don't live on the coast. It doesn't matter. You're still connected. Your survival is connected to the ocean. A large part of our survival is connected to things that we don't see, nor do we think about. The ocean's one of them. The other one is bees. And with a lot of the chemicals that we're using, the pesticides that we're using, we're beginning to wipe out the bees. And then, of course, with our seasons becoming more unpredictable, well, the bees aren't able to be on the same sort of schedule that they were before because of how rapidly weather is changing all over the place. And if the bees stop pollinating, you don't eat. So based on the analysis of these mass extinctions, these previous mass extinctions, Professor Rothman developed a mathematical formula to help predict how much extra carbon could be added to the oceans, which absorb vast amounts from the atmosphere. For the figure of 310 gigatons is just 10 gigatons is above the figure expected to be emitted by 2100. Okay, 310. Under the best case scenario forecast by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the worst case scenario would be more than 500 gigatons. Sometimes some scientists argue that the sixth mass extinction has already effectively begun, while the total number of species that have disappeared from the planet comes nowhere near the most apocalyptic events of the past. The rates of species loss is comparable. Question: why do we have the policy that we have about global climate change? Think about that. Why do we have the policy in place that we have? Why do we have a government full of people denying science, when the vast majority of scientists, 96 to 98% of scientists, an overwhelming majority, say that climate change is real? It's happening. It's here now. And I've heard this before, and this is insane. I've heard people say, all these scientists, they all agree with each other. Really? You think that's what they do? They just sit around and nod their heads. They're not ditto heads. And they don't agree with each other. And there's a lot of fighting inside the scientific community about all kinds of things. But this particular thing is not a debate. It is only in the United States, among the United States Republican Party. That's the only group in the entire developed world that thinks that climate change isn't real. And I say developed world, because I'm pretty sure you can go into a third world nation, they'll deny it too. But they lack knowledge. We don't lack knowledge. And yet we can't admit that this is a thing and that this is happening. So why do we have the policy that we have on climate change? Why is the government full of people that deny facts, reason, logic, and empirical evidence? Why is that? Because we have decided, either wittingly or unwittingly, collectively. And I say this, I understand that, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans, they didn't get more votes necessarily. But the system has been rigged and it's been set up so that Republicans win even if they don't get more votes. And that's what happened. We saw with George W. Bush, it was something like he got 90,000 fewer votes or some small number back in 2000 and still ended up with the presidency. Well, Trump got 3 million fewer votes, still ended up with the presidency. And that's how the game is being rigged. But scrapping all that, 56 million people, 59 million people still voted for this guy. So what we have decided is that this is the policy that we want. But why? We've been told that we need to lessen regulation because lowering regulation is going to create more jobs and we're all going to be better off and we're going to earn more money. But that doesn't seem to be what's happening. Why do we have our policy with respect to the Pentagon, with our foreign policy? Why do we do that? Why are we in a perpetual state of warfare? All of these things that we have decided, whether we realize it or not, every single one of these things only helps make a rich guy richer. The fossil fuel industry doesn't want to admit that this is real, doesn't want to admit that this is happening, because they're going to have to do something about it. And that might cost them some money. Eventually, it might cost them their industry with war. There are a lot of military contractors, and they make a ton of money on war. And they've convinced us that we are not safe unless they are getting massively richer. Never mind the fact that we are in a constant state of warfare. and that we are just creating more terrorism, and that the world is less safe. We have decided that it's more important to make rich people richer than it is to make us better off.
Let's not insult the intelligence of the American people. People aren't dumb. Why in God's name does Wall Street make huge campaign contributions? I guess just for the fun of it. They want to throw money around. Why does the pharmaceutical industry make huge campaign contributions? Any connection, maybe, to the fact that our people pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs? Why does the fossil fuel industry spend huge amounts of money on campaign contributions? Any connection to the fact that not one Republican candidate for president thinks and agrees with the scientific community that climate change is real and that we have got to transform our energy system? And when we talk about Wall Street, let's talk about Wall Street. I voted for Dodd-Frank, got an important amendment in it. My view, it doesn't go anywhere near far enough. But when we talk about Wall Street, you have Wall Street and major banks have paid $200 billion in fines since the great crash. No Wall Street executive has been prosecuted.
Why do we have the policy that we have with regard to health care? Its delivery, the way that we pay for it. Because once again, with this particular thing, we have decided that it's more important to make a rich person richer than it is for us to actually get health care. I hear so much about how small business is going to be screwed if we have a comprehensive national health care program. Screwed small business! No. I didn't have a lot of authority before. Just a lot of reading. But I've got quite a bit of authority now. Because now I'm a small business owner. And now I am shouting from the rooftops that firsthand experience shows me that they're lying. With my small business, if I want to hire employees, and I've already decided, if I have to bring anybody on board, right now I've just got the family working on it, and family works for family wages, you feel me? But if I have to bring anybody, a stranger, on board, that person is going to make no less than $20 an hour. Yes, I can afford that with the extra help that they're going to provide. My business will be able to make that much more money, and I will then kick them down a fair wage. And I feel like $20 an hour is a fair wage. And that's okay. But if I want to provide them with benefits, if I want to provide them with healthcare, that particular cost could sink my business hard. I still work a full-time job on top of being a business owner. And I do so largely for healthcare. That's insane. I'm handcuffed to a job that I don't want to be at. And the stress of working that much, and I'm going to keep it up for as long as I can, but the stress of working that much, that could actually ruin my business. So the current system that we have now, that's what could destroy my business. Because the way that we have decided to do healthcare is nothing short of absolutely stupid. So, article, even business leaders are realizing that healthcare insurance companies serve no purpose. This is from Truthout. This is by a gentleman named Wendell Potter. Wendell Potter used to be a health insurance executive. A poll shows that a growing number of Americans are warming up to the idea of single-payer healthcare. And that is relevant because most of us have lost faith in private health insurers. In fact, according to a June 2017 poll by the Pew Research Center, 60% of those surveyed said the federal government has the responsibility to provide coverage to all Americans. We've seen similar polls in the past. As the former head, this is Wendell talking, as the former head of a corporate communications for the global health insurance company Cigna, I saw surveys on a regular basis that consistently showed a sizable percentage of Americans held private health insurance companies in very low regard and would be happy to not have to deal with them. Those surveys also showed growing support for single-payer health care. 2007, while I was an industry executive, a proprietary poll conducted for the industry showed that 90% of Americans viewed insurers favorably. That same poll showed that 77% believe that Congress should do something about the unreasonable cost of health insurance and other health care services. Most people actually favored a Canadian-style health care system over any other potential solution. Warren Buffett has referred to our current health care system, and Warren Buffett and his group over at Berkshire Hathaway has now gotten behind single payer. And they refer to our current medical system, the way we pay. And this isn't the doctors or hospital, which are doing a fine job. This is the way that we have decided to implement it and pay for it. They refer to it as the tapeworm of American economic competitiveness. So, dig this. Congress, in an overwhelming majority, Congress just decided to give, listen up, they just decided to give the Pentagon $800 billion. Boom. Let me say that again. $800 billion. There's a healthcare debate going on right now because Trump Care has come back from the dead. It's worse than before. Promises to murder more people. And Congress is really trying hard to pass it. Americans have seen that, and Americans are marching in the streets. Nazis! Nazis are in the street. We're marching against them, too. So we have these causes. We can clearly get out there. We can clearly get motivated. We can clearly move our asses and make this stuff happen. Right? And Congress is running scared. Looks like Trump Care might not pass. Again, might. But then again, it might. There's a lot of money being handed out right now from that dying dinosaur industry. But what about the Pentagon? They just got $800 billion. Now, that's a mind-boggling amount of money. So dig this. Portland, Oregon. That's where I'm at. And in Portland, Oregon, we have something called the arts tax. It's $35 a year, and it is, and your ability to pay it is based on your income. It's a small income. If you make at least $1,000 a year, and the vast majority of people do, you got to pay a $35 per month, what they refer to as arts tax. And what that pays for is arts and music education. And art is good for everything. It's not just a fantastic release. Studies show the fantastic things that it does for your brain and your confidence and all these other things. The benefits of art are absolutely immense. And so Portland has decided that we're going to go ahead and pay for that because it's for the betterment of society. You pay the arts tax. The fight about paying that $35 fee has been in and out of our court system now for 4.5 years. Let me say that again. A $35 a year fee has been in and out of our court system for the last 4.5 years, with conservatives largely screaming and pounding the table and, my God, my $35. I'd pay $100. I don't care. It's good money for a good cause. I don't mind that my money goes to pay for welfare, to pay for housing assistance, to pay for food assistance, to pay for public schools, even if I don't have kids. I don't mind that that is where my money goes. That's an investment in America. That's an investment in my city. It's an investment in my state, our intellectual infrastructure, keeping people alive and healthy and housed. I don't mind paying for that stuff. These folks just losing their minds over this $35 fee. And it recently came out, another court decision, this time from the state Supreme Court, that the arts tax is constitutional and that they're going to have to pay their $35. Wah, wah. But think about how vigorous, and you can look up any number of articles online from wherever you're at. Think about how vigorously they fought for that. My God, $35. Now let's think about the Pentagon, for which we have a completely different set of standards. $800 billion, and this is not a Democratic or Republican issue. 89-8, that was the vote. 89-8, that means a clear majority of not just your Republicans, but also your Democrats voted for it too. And you don't even have to know the individual votes. Well, if you find them and you find out that your senator was one of the ones that voted for it, you should probably raise some hell. But based on the makeup of Congress, you don't even have to look at the individual votes to know that's a whole lot of Democrats and that's a whole lot of Republicans, and they all voted for it. And there were no marching. There was no marching in the streets. There was no protesting. There was no hammering Congress not to vote for this bill. It's an automatic thing. We've done something where we deify the military, which is absolutely insane to me. If you go into the military and you serve, you certainly deserve all the benefits, the kudos, and the care that goes along with that. But we've made the military something that we are not allowed to question. We don't manufacture anything in America anymore. We don't manufacture jeans. We don't manufacture VCRs. VCRs, look how old I am. DVD players. We don't manufacture T-shirts, anything. We don't manufacture things in America anymore. You know, we've outsourced all of that. But the one thing we do manufacture are weapons of war, mass destruction, weapons for killing. We make guns, bombs, tanks. That's the stuff that's important to us. And that stuff is made in all 50 states, or just about all 50 states. And what that does is that puts jobs in those states. And with stuff being made for war in all the states, all of your senators go ahead and vote for it. But then we talk about healthcare. No. We can't pay for healthcare. We can't have a healthcare system, right? A comprehensive healthcare system that helps people. We cannot do it. Why? Because we cannot afford it. How about tuition-free college education? No. We absolutely cannot do that. We can't. I'm going to take a wild guess about why we can't. Is it because we can't afford it? Yeah, it's absolutely because we can't afford it. And people will shout from the rooftops about how they don't want to pay for people's health care and how they don't want to pay for people's education. Let me tell you something, Jack. You're already paying for both. I got into an accident in 1999 when I was in between homes, let's just say. I had no job, no money, no means, crashing on people's couches. It wasn't a great time for me. But I got hurt pretty bad. And I split my hand open. Pretty nice gash, you know, about an inch and a half. But my hand was bleeding bad enough. I could see the inside of it. It was just gross. I won't tell you I did it. It's not important. But I had to be rushed to the emergency room. And they then sewed up my hand. And so we need your information, sir. They got my name and my birth date and all that stuff. But I had no address. Sorry. Homeless. What? Yeah, living in my car right now. Homeless. So who do you think paid for that bill? I can tell you who paid for that bill. Those of you that pay premiums right now that are watching those premiums go up all the time. See, we have a system with respect to healthcare where they can't turn you away. They can't turn you down for care. But when that care does not get paid for, it goes to you. Those of you that are paying premiums, you're already paying for it. So back during the aughts, when George W. Bush was president, the Republicans thought that it would be an absolutely brilliant idea to take college costs out of bankruptcy. You can still file for bankruptcy, but you can't do that with your student loans, with your school loans. And they said, that's fine. This will just make everybody freaking pay. And it turns the education industry, the higher education industry, into another place where rich people could just make more money. In this case, of course, it's the banks. But you can't guarantee someone is going to pay just by doing that. So we've got $1 trillion in loans out there. And most of them are solvent. But there's a pretty fair amount of them that are going the absolute opposite direction. And who the hell do you think is going to pay for that? Let me give you a hint. You. That's not a hint. That's an answer. So here's what we could have done with that money. We could have paid off everybody's school loans. Yeah. And here's another thing that we could have done if we really want to. We can implement a comprehensive national healthcare system. The infrastructure is already in place for Medicare for All. It's already there. You just have to slowly add people into the system. I say first allow a buy-in coupled with a qualifier. So say, you know, people who are now 60, because you have to be 65, I think. 60 can start buying in. Let those people feather in and then drop it to 55. Age of eligibility, drop it to 55. Feather those people in and then drop the age of eligibility again. Until you get all the way to zero. We have the system. And it's been in place for a while. So we know what it's like. We know how it works. We know what it's going to look like when everybody gets covered. It's pretty simple. And it wouldn't cost us a whole lot of money. But we have decided that investing in our intellectual infrastructure, that's not worth it. We don't have that money. Investing in ourselves, our bodies, taking care of each other. We have decided that that's not worth it. But weapons of war? Yeah, we can afford that. Creating more terrorists? Yeah. Yeah, we can absolutely afford that. And you say, Melvin, that's nuts. Come on. Melvin, I'm with you. I would rather spend the money on those things too. And I believe you. But the frustration comes with this. That's not where your countrymen are at. Because if they were, you would have seen just as vigorous a protest with respect to this military bill. You'd have seen just as big a protest with that as you saw against the Nazis and against Trump Care. And we are seeing none of it. So Donald Trump asked for $54 billion. $54 billion for this military budget. And Congress handed him $700 billion. I think I've been saying $800 billion. And quoting from the article here by The Intercept, by Alex Emmons, put it another way, with a $700 billion military budget, the U.S. would be spending more than three times as much on as China on its military and 10 times as much as Russia, according to SIPRI. The U.S. already accounts for more than a third of all military spending. Or with $80 billion a year, $80 billion per year, you could make colleges and universities, public colleges in the and universities in the U.S. tuition free. In fact, Sanders' proposal, Bernie Sanders, was only estimated to cost the federal government $47 billion a year. Far less. Far, far less. If the additional military spending over the next 10 years instead went to pay off student debt, it could come close to wiping it out entirely. Proposals like this were written off. Even by Democrats. Hillary Clinton, in her recent book, pointed out that she called this America should get a pony. Like that's how they talked about it. The America should get a pony, but who the hell's gonna pay for it? So even Democrats have just poo-pooed this idea and gotten behind the Republicans on it. When college costs go up in other countries, and there doesn't seem to be good reasoning behind it, those people hit the streets and they raise hell. Our college costs go up every year, exponential amounts, and nobody even notices. Nobody even cares. And I can promise you that the reason they're going up at the rate with which they're going up is based on the system that we have that allows them to screw us. And more than a few of us are willing participants in this. So where and how is the change going to come? Let's start with the environment. So I've talked about this with Europe. They're getting rid of petrol engines by 2040. In India, they're getting rid of petrol engines by 2030. But in China, they want to be rid of them, both diesel and unleaded. They haven't talked about jets yet, but diesel and unleaded. They want rid of them by 2025. That's pretty damn close. So the idea that the world could lose, I mean, all of its species, or almost all of its species, by the year 2100. I'm not going to see that year. I'd live to be 130-something. I don't want to be 130-something. My time on this planet will be good, long enough, but not so damn long that I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records. My kids could potentially see that year. But if they have kids, they will see that year. They will witness with their own eyes the elimination, the absolute wiping out of most of Earth's species. And you go, well, that's fine. I mean, because they're going to die too. No, no, no. Look around at everything that we have. Look around at, just think about when you wanted to look something up, you know, say even a couple decades ago. You've got to go to the library, card catalog, flip through books and all this stuff. You walk up to a computer, and every home has one now, almost regardless of income. Plug it into Google, and it's right effing there. It's amazing. We have more knowledge and access to knowledge than we've ever had before. And yet, we have probably the most ignorant, certainly in my lifetime, the most ignorant people that I've ever seen before. Ignorance has never reigned quite like it does now. A couple of years ago, Republicans, a majority of Republicans, said that college, like it's like 56%, they said that college was good and necessary and helpful to society. With the election of Donald Trump, that number sits around 18 or 19% that say that college is a good and necessary thing. It's anti-intellectualism. The access to the knowledge that we have has, for conservatives at least, it has turned them against it because it does not comport with their worldview. When it comes to the environment, I think we're on, even with all the things that are happening in America right now, I think we're on a good track to potentially be able to confront climate change, and it's unfortunately going to be led by China. And I say that not against China, but against America, because we have the technology. We have the know-how. What we lack is the social and political will. It should be us leading on that, but it is not, because we've decided that we don't want to lead. And how about with respect to education? What we're looking at right now is what could be referred to as a debt bomb. And that debt bomb, because we've got thousands of students a day that are defaulting on these school loans, which shouldn't even exist in the first place. And that debt bomb is going to go off at some point. It's going to have to. And that is going to force us to rethink and redo the way that we handle higher education. It's not going to be fun or comfortable when that goes off, but it is going to be necessary. So I do see a way forward with respect to in our environmental policy, despite the fact that we've got regulatory capture right now in the federal government. I do see a way forward with education as well. And with healthcare, Bernie Sanders has introduced a Medicare for All bill into Congress. Now, you say, hey, the Democrats don't have control right now. The Democrats don't have power, and that's true. So any bill that they bring forward does not have to go to the floor. And it's very unlikely that Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan is going to want to bring it to the floor because it helps people instead of killing people. But it appears that we're on a trajectory right now where Trump is going to suffer another incredibly embarrassing blow. He was going to repeal Obamacare on day one. He's been president almost a year now, and it's not happening. He was going to defeat ISIS in 30 days, and that's not happening. He was going to tell China what's what, and that's not happening. Just another embarrassment for him. And nobody likes any of the proposals that the Republicans have come up with. So is it possible that in this time, we could end up with single-payer health care, or at the very least, a public option that we are allowed to buy into?
When I was in Iraq, I didn't want somebody sending my ass six-week-old stale brownies or a five-minute calling card. You can't even get a dial tone in Iraq with a five-minute calling card. I wanted them to get me and my friends' asses out of there and for none of us to die for no reason.
And with respect to war, that is one I unfortunately don't see changing. And even among many of my countrymen, I don't see any kind of will to want to change it. With this gigantic military budget that just passed, it doesn't look good. I've long blamed the potential societal collapse on this program on, as I said, it's going to be climate change. It's going to be climate change. That's what it is. Just, but what I'm realizing now is the almost natural tendency for humans to self-destruct, no matter how much good they do, the natural tendency to self-destruct, it's not just going to have this one factor. It's going to be multifaceted. So what we've decided with our healthcare system is it's more important to make money than it is to help people. What we've decided with our foreign policy, and that's going to lead to a lot of people being killed. What we've decided with our foreign policy is it's more important for someone to make money than it is for us to have good foreign policy. We're in a perpetual state of warfare. What we've decided with respect to the environment is it's more important that these petrol companies continue making obscene amounts of money than it is for us to have an inhabitable planet. What we have decided, or have we decided? Have we decided? Or has it been decided for us and we merely did not protest that decision? And so I'm reading Jared Diamond's book, Collapse, right now. And it talks about how societies succeed or fail. And after reading his book, I've begun to take into account that it's not just this one thing that we're doing. We're doing all of these things. And they're all wrong. And it's almost like we're making the wrong decision on purpose. I want to talk about another thing. Trump has decided that Nazis are very fine people, or at least there are some very fine people among them. But he's decided that these folks, these African Americans that play in the NFL, that have decided to take a knee during the national anthem. The national anthem, a song written by a hardcore racist. Those who take a knee during the national anthem, those people are sons of bitches.
World War II, there are a lot of African Americans that went to foreign soil to fight.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting for freedoms in a foreign land that when they came home, they didn't enjoy themselves. Under that flag, with those veterans. So think about this. You go to Germany and you go overseas and you fight for freedoms of people you have no idea, have nothing in common mm-hmm. with. In the very country that you're representing, when you come back to it, you're a second-class citizen.
Correct.
If you're Ben Carson or your Michael Steele or any of these other black conservatives and you're doing what the white man tells you to do, you are right in their book. If you are Steph Curry or you are LeBron James, you know, or you are Colin Kaepernick and you're playing those sports and you're entertaining the white folk, what you're doing is A-OK. But the minute you start thinking, you start speaking out, you get out of line, it pisses off a lot of white folks.
Me, agreed. I have a very unique perspective, mm-hmm. Skip.
Okay.
I'm from rural South Georgia.
You are.
I'm 48 years old, Skip. And if I don't tell you my religion, you can't guess it. If I don't tell you my mom's name, you couldn't guess it. I was dirt poor. 1,000 square feet, 10 people sometimes, mm-hmm. cement floors, 10 roof. I'm well off now. The one thing that I've been for 48 years mm-hmm. is black. That's what you see. You don't see my religion. You don't see my orientation. You don't know my political affiliation. But you see this. I see people get on shows and the officers say non-compliance. Well, I saw a guy in Florida, a white guy, stab two people, kill him, stabbed another guy, was eating the guy's face. Female officer tased him. They have to wait 10, 15 minutes, and they take him alive. I see a guy selling CDs, and he's killed. I see a guy selling loose leaf cigarettes, and he's killed. See, that's what gets us up in arms.
I should.
Because you say non-compliance is a death sentence. If a man is gnawing a man's face after he's killed two people, we see what happened in Colorado. The guy killed 12, and they take him alive. We see what happened in Charleston with nine parishioners. He drives. Not only do they take him alive, they take him by Burger King because he's hungry. So you think we're supposed to be okay with this?
No.
In what system?
So that's Shannon Sharp, putting it better than I ever could. And the kind of ignorance that he is talking about, there's no shortage of. I work with a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, who is an absolutely ignorant. He's the other driver. I get into his truck, and I hear he's got Lars Larson tuned in on the radio. Great. Lars Larson is a white supremacist. He will not openly tell you that. But nobody promoted Donald Trump harder in the Portland area than that guy. And Donald Trump is a white supremacist. And you do not get to pretend that you are not a white supremacist when you support white supremacists. You're in denial. So I hear Lars Larson. I go, that's fine. I hear Lars Larson too. I listen to Lars Larson sometimes. The guy's flat out ignorant. So I have to tune in, hear what the dummies are saying. And so I'm in the office working. And I hear this leave his mouth. Talking about the people that got killed. We work with a black gentleman. And he expresses some outrage that another cop goes free after killing a black man. You know, it caught on tape and all this other stuff. And this guy, the Lars Larson guy, pipes up and says, well, jury found the cop not guilty, so that's just the way it is. And that's so, you know, there's obviously enough evidence there, so the guy must have been in the wrong. Hold on. A death sentence. Think about that. A death sentence because you're an African-American and you had an interaction with an officer. And so the African-American gentleman I work with takes exception to this and says, really, have you seen the tape? And the Lars Larson's guy, he responds, he says, not this tape. Hold on. Not this tape? Because there are so many times, so many tapes of African-Americans being murdered on film, unjustly, sometimes even being shot in the back while they're running away from the police. And white people, overwhelmingly, do not have this experience. And then, when they're asked about it, even if they're not asked about it, they can't wait to defend. They're chomping at the bit to defend these police officers that are killing these African Americans. To all of my people this Sunday that are taking a knee out on the field during the national anthem to protest what is happening to our African American brothers and sisters out there with respect to our police force, the people that we pay, the state sanctioned killings. To all of those that have decided to take a knee, I'm with you. I'm white, but I ain't stupid. I'm white, and I'm with you. Take a knee, because we need to bring more attention to this. Colin Kaepernick got a raw deal in a big way, because he decided to take a knee, and everybody was looking sideways at Colin Kaepernick. And the 49ers have done absolutely awful this year. And I could make a pretty good case. I'm not going to get into all kinds of football right now, but I could make a pretty good case that because they decided not to bring on Kaepernick, they got this other guy right now. They've not made a single touchdown all year. Now, anything could happen on Sunday, any given Sunday, as the old saying goes. But I think their team is in the shambles that it's in right now because they decided not to take Kaepernick on. No one's decided to take Kaepernick on because he took a knee to protest police violence. He took a knee during a song that was written by Francis Scott Key, a hardcore racist and race separatist. And Colin Kaepernick was punished for it. And this Sunday, we're going to see dozens, if not hundreds, of African-American NFL players also take a knee in solidarity, not just with the African-Americans that have been killed, but with Colin Kaepernick. And no one's going to be looking at Kaepernick side-eyed anymore because he's not the only one.
Chances are you heard this was predicted to be our last day on Earth, a doomsday scenario from a California minister who spent millions of dollars in contributions from his followers to advertise the end of days all over the world. NBC's George Lewis reports now on what did and did not happen.
Times Square, New York, at precisely 6 p.m. tonight. Nothing out of the ordinary happened. The world did not end. That had been the prediction of Oakland, California pastor Harold Camping, spreading the doomsday word through billboards, pamphlets, and radio and TV broadcasts.
It will begin with a huge earthquake in probably on the other side of the world where the day begins.
But on the other side of the world, in the Philippines, Camping's followers waited, and again, nothing happened.
Let me finish up with this. So, I'm taping today on Saturday, September 23rd, and the world, again, was supposed to end today. And this is the bill of goods that is being constantly sold to us. The world's going to end on this day, and the world's going to end on that day, the world's going to end on this day, and it's all because these religious snake oil salesmen tell us that it is going to end. And of course, it never happens. We have a date where it looks like we are going to wipe ourselves out. And it is not going to be God coming for his people to take us off the planet. It appears that it is only going to be us taking ourselves off the planet because we have decided that profit is more important than people. And how did we get here? Because we have decided that it is of vast importance to buy snake oil from snake oil salesmen. We've bought it from politicians, we've bought it from industry leaders, we've bought it from CEOs and board members and banks and Donald Trump and every dum-dum that works for him. We've bought it from liars, people that we know are liars, and we have done this destruction to ourselves, and I have to say, I do not understand the American psyche. I do not understand why we continue to operate under these conditions with these false pretenses. It doesn't make any sense to me. But we keep doing it. We're told that we can't afford to pay for college. We're told that we can't afford to pay for healthcare. We're told that we can't afford to not be at war all the damn time. We have no problem giving money to those guys, giving tax breaks to billionaires. You and I pay a disproportionate amount of the tax bill. We pay for everything. And then those who get all the benefits pay for little to nothing. And as a matter of fact, many of those even get a refund after they have paid absolutely zero in taxes. The game has been turned against us. And we have decided that that is okay. Did we decide that that is okay? Or is that what has been decided for us? I imagine in the future, any number of years from now, when all this stuff starts going sideways, someone turning back, looking at articles, recordings like this one, and going, man, how did nobody hear this? How did nobody notice this? How did people become so complacent? The answers were right there. And this is the way that we decided to conduct ourselves. This is the way we decided to wipe ourselves out. The world is not going to end because Christ is coming. We are going to end it ourselves because we have decided that everything that we've worked for, we don't mind wiping that out over the next 80, 90 years. The issues spoken about today on today's show are very near and dear to my heart. The healthcare thing kills me. Those are my people that we're killing. The thing about war and foreign policy, that kills me. How in the hell do we think that that's a good idea with respect to the environment and breathable air and an inhabitable environment? That stuff just kills me. I don't understand why we're not just shooting ourselves in the foot, but also shooting ourselves in the face. I see a way forward. I see a way out. I see something that can be done about it. But what we need to muster up is that will to do it. Now, I imagine for a fair amount of the people listening to this show right now are already there. You already feel it. You're with me. But there's quite a few who are not. And we need to start talking about these issues with them. Well, I can't talk about healthcare. That's a political issue. No, it's not. Everybody has a body. Everybody's going to have to see a doctor. Healthcare is not a political issue. What about burning petrol in the environment? That's a political issue. No, it is not. Global climate change is not a political issue. There is hard empirical evidence. We have scientists, smart people, and we know these things. This is not politics. Healthcare is not political. Global climate change is not political. Paying for college, well, that's definitely political. No, it's not. It's not a political issue. Most people want to go to college or get some sort of higher education, even if it's just a trade school. And this is something that affects everybody. It's not a political issue. There's no two sets of facts on this. There is only one. These are not political issues. Talk to people. Engage with them. Don't be afraid. And if they turn to you and go, that's politics. No, it's not. And to say otherwise is ignorant. What I've learned about politics over the last number of years is that there's this. There is that which is true, and then there's politics. Politics is where lies go to live, truth goes to die. What we know about our foreign policy, what we know about environmental science, what we know about healthcare, what we know about paying for higher education, that stuff is real. That's not politics. The denial that we continue to live inside and deny ourselves those benefits, that is politics. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin, the producer, who had a birthday this week. I'm going to tell you how old he is, but happy birthday, Kevin. Thank you for listening. This is Mel, signing off. Now that I have woken you up, good morning.